And we're holding on Samach Vav Amud Beis, 10 lines from 9 lines from the bottom. The line begins Dirav Yoda. We discussed yesterday as follows. Our Mishnah had told us about the two different kinds of nechosim that a woman brings into a marriage, nechsei melug, where she owns the actual goof of them and the husband is just entitled to the payrus, and nechsei tzoin barzel, where those are actually written into the ksuba, the value of them is written into the ksuba, and she actually retains ownership of that, or actually the husband has full ownership of them, but he is responsible to pay her back for their full value when the marriage is over, when he dies or divorces her. So we discussed the question. So now, if when they get divorced, she wants those actual kalim back, and he's saying instead of giving you the actual kalim, I'll give you the value and I'll keep the kalim. Can he do that or not? Rav Ami had said he could, and Rav Yehuda had said that not, because shvach beis aviyah, because it makes her family and herself look better when they have actual kalim, actual tangible assets in the marriage that she got from her father's house. And we said the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. So now in that connection, the Gemara tells, hahi itza de aile le gavra itzdilo de milsa b'ksubasa. It happened that a woman, as part of her ksuba, as part of what she brought into the marriage, she brought in a piece of clothing, an itzdilo is like a talus or something, made of milsa of fine linen, or some of them before say silk, whatever. It was worth a lot of money, b'ksubasa, and that was part of her ksuba. Well, what happened was shachiv, the husband passed away. So now at this point, the value of it is supposed to go to her, or actually according to the Yehuda, she's entitled to the actual object itself. But shaklua yasmi or prosua amisna, the yisoimim took that piece of clothing and spread it out over the mess, which now makes it also bahana, because it now became part of the tachrichim of the mess. Now, they shouldn't have done that, by the way. The Rambam mentions, based on something in Masech HaSmachas, it's actually going to be in Shloisha Parakim of Rambam in a day or two, that they had no business doing that. They should realize your tachrichim are supposed to be cheap, and you're not supposed to waste expensive clothing like that on tachrichim. It's going to go rot in the grave anyway. If you really don't want it anymore, then give the value to tzedakah or something. But anyway, the fact is they did that. So now it became also bahana. The question is, does it become osabana? So Rava says the mess now acquired it, and now the wife is not entitled, now the widow is not entitled to that piece of clothing back. All she can do, they have to give her the money, but they don't give her the actual object itself. So though Nanai, the son of Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rava, so this would be Rava's grandson, asked Rav Kahana, this is already the next generation, Rav Kahana is a Talmud of Rava, so Rava's grandson is asking him, didn't Rava say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? So that means, in other words, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the object actually belongs to her. How do the Yoshim have the ability to take it away and make it also bahana? In other words, the premise of the question was, if, for example, if you own something and I have no ownership of the object at all, and I take the thing and for example, use it as tachrichim, it won't become also bahana because not mine. Einonim osa drabashayin shaloi. So then how do these Yoshim have the right? If according to Rava, this doesn't belong to them, then it's Dovah She'ena Shaloi. How do they have the ability to answer it? Amalei, sort of Kahana answers him, Milay Modir of Yehuda de Mechusa Guvaina. After all, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it still needs to be collected. It's still not fully in her Rishus. What it means is Rabbi Yehuda says she has a shibud on it. Meaning, now, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Shibud is stronger than Rami is making it. Rami is saying she doesn't even really have a Shibud on the object itself, only on the value of it. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying she has a Shibud on the actual object. But the fact is, it's not yet in her Rishus until she actually collects it. So therefore, it is still in their Rishus. So they have the ability, since at that point, it's still lacking collection, then it's still in their Rishus to the extent that now they're able to be in effect makdishit, because that's in effect when they make it for tachrichim, it becomes a form of hekdish. In fact, the fact that tachrichim and other things that are buried with the mess are also bahana, we actually learn it we don't learn it from hekdish per se, we learn it by zeder shavah from egla arufa. But the point is that it becomes an isur hana similar to hekdish. So therefore, yes, they even according to Rabbi Yehuda, they do have the ability to do that because they do have a certain degree of ownership of it. And therefore, even Rava, who's saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, is going to have to agree to that. So they have the ability to do that. And once they did that, once they made it hekdish, then it's off limits to her, and then they're only required to pay the money. So the Gemara says Rava la taimei, which means that Rava is going according to his svara. The Omar Rava, which Rava himself says, Hekdesh Chometz v'Shichru Mafkin Midei Shibud. We had this earlier in the Masechta, actually. We had this in connection with the discussion. We have an Eved Knani, and you go and free him by not having him Tovel, by having him Tovel L'Shem Ben Chorin, then he goes free. So the point is, Rava had said that these three things, Hekdesh Chometz v'Shichru Mafkin Midei Shibud, all of those undo the shibud, meaning chometz hektish means, for example, what we just said, if you have an object where Reuven owns it, but Shimon has a shibud on it, for example, in this case, because it's part of Huxova, but Reuven is makdish it, and he has the ability to, because he has a certain degree of ownership of it, like they do over here, then that undoes the shibud, and that makes that now this object is not under, now that now it's not under a shibud anymore, now just the value of it has to be paid to the other person. Rashi stresses that we're talking about over here only when it has kedushas aguf. If it had been the kind of hektish, which is only kedushas damim, then that wouldn't be correct. Kedushas damim, in fact, does not undo a shibud, but here we're talking about kedushas aguf. So therefore, that's what it does. So that's hektish.
Does that hold for kahka also? And real estate?
So that's what we're talking about, in other words. So, right. So real estate would be the same thing.
Even when the object is irreplaceable, because real estate is not replaceable.
Yeah. So in the case of land, what it would mean is exactly that. The land becomes, well, so land doesn't have kedushas aguf. Land by definition can only have kedushas damim. So again, that's why Rashi is stressing we're talking about kedushas aguf. But yeah, same idea. For example, let's say, for example, Reuven lends Shimon money, and Shimon says, I'm making my cow an aposiki for this. So in other words, when it comes time to collect, then my cow is mortgaged to it. If I don't pay you back, then you can take that cow. And now afterwards, Shimon goes and takes that cow and is makdish it as a korban. Then yeah, we say the aposiki goes away and Reuven can't collect from that. If Shimon pays back, then good. And if not, then you have the usual ways in which he's going to be able to collect his debt in other ways, but not from that object. So that's hektish. It would be the same thing whether it's irreplaceable or not. Chometz would be, for example, so Rashi gives the example that a goy lent a Jew money and the Jew used his chometz as collateral for the loan. So now when Pesach comes, then that chometz is going to be also bahana, because after all, it belongs to a yid. So Rashi points out over there that we're talking about that now you do have times when it will be mutter, namely if the Jew actually placed it in the goy's house, you know, that's what it's called, where there it's not in the Jew's property over Pesach, so then it's not mechusa guvaina. The point is we're saying over here in our Gemara that it's mechusa guvaina, it has yet to be collected, therefore it's still in the reshus of the Jew, and therefore it becomes osur, and therefore he can't use it, therefore the goy can't collect from it after Pesach. And Rashi mentioned that same point back on Daf Mem Vav and gave basically the same answer, basically the same explanation over there that we're talking about, that he made his chometz and apusiki and it's in the Jew's possession. Anyway, the point is, so again, that undoes the shibud, the shichrur, and for example, if a slave was freed, so for example, a Jew again made his eved is going to be an apusiki to collect the debt, and then he freed him, so the freedom of the slave takes effect. And you don't have, he's going to have to collect his debt from someplace else. So mafkin midei shibud, all of those things undo a shibud. So therefore, by the same token here, when the yoshim took this itzel de milsa, this fancy woolen coat, and used it for tachrichim. They shouldn't have done that, but nevertheless, the fact is they did that, and therefore they had the ability to do it because it was still in their reshus, even according to the Yehuda, and therefore all they do is pay back the value. Okay. The Gemara mentions another din in this connection. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, ichnisa l'shnei kelim be'elef zuz. Now, what happens if she brought into the marriage two kelim, which together are worth 1,000 zuz? V'shavu, over time, they've increased in value. V'amdu al-shnei alafim. Now, the total value of the two kelim is 2,000. Now, obviously, in terms of the ksuba payment, she's only entitled to the value of 1,000. But Rabbi Yehuda says, Echad netalta b'ksubasa, one of them she gets because that's the actual payment of the amount in her ksuba for the nichsitza in Basel. The Echad, and as far as the second one, nesenes damim netlatoi, if she wants it, if she wants that second keli as well, she can give money and take it. In other words, and the Yoshim can't say, sorry, this one belongs to us and we only have to give you the 1,000. If she we only have to give you the one and we get to keep the other. If she wants the other as well, then fine. She doesn't get it for free because that's not the value that was put in Huxuba, but they can't prevent her from giving them the money and taking it, because again, you have the factor of Shevach Beisavia, that it makes her and her father's household look good when they have these expensive kalim that came from her father's house and now are coming into her next marriage. So therefore, in other words, in short, they're required to sell that second kalim to her. So the Gemara says, my kamash malon. So what's Rabbi Yehuda's chiddush with that? Shvach beisavia didahavi is the chiddush is that whenever we have shvach beisavia, it belongs to her. Ha amr Rabbi Yehuda chodazimna. We already have the previous din where Rabbi Yehuda said that. What is he adding in this one? And the answer is without Rabbi Yehuda telling us ma'udat tema, you would have thought to say hanimila hef the matyal mishkol b'ksavasa. Sure, when the keli is something that is something that she gets as part of her ksuba, as in the previous case where we had the, you know, for example, the keli at the time when she got married was worth 1,000 and now it's still worth 1,000, or for that matter, now it depreciated and now it's worth less, whatever, then she's entitled to that keli. That we know from Rabbi Yehuda's first in, fine, because it's all within the amount that she's supposed to get for her ksuba. But in this case where we're saying it's not actually part of her ksuba, the fact that we require the Yoshim to accept the money and give her the keli. Loi, we wouldn't have known that from his first din. You would think, after all, they belong to them. Kamash Malan, and therefore, Rabbi Yehuda tells us that even in that case, she's entitled to say, I want that actual keli, and therefore I will pay you for it, and you have no choice but to take that money and give me that keli because of Shvach Beisavia. And that's the halacha.
Did the Chachamim impose a knas on someone who does that to prevent that type of theft?
You're talking about, for example, the case of the tachrichim. Not that I know of. Doesn't mean that on a case by case basis, Beisdin might not do something about it for the future. If nothing else, again, in this case, you know, it's going to waste. No, as for there's no particular statutory knas or anything for that. And as far as the other cases, also hektish comments for shichru. No, I mean, again, on a case by case basis, Beisdin can do something about it, but as a statutory thing, no. Okay, the Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of, again, the subject of the perek is who of a kohen's household is and isn't allowed to eat truma. So the Mishnah says, bas yisrael shenisas l'kohen, a bas yisrael who, of course, is not allowed to eat truma until she actually marries the kohen. So now she marries the kohen. So far, so good. She can eat truma. But umes v'himicha mu'uberes, now he died and left her pregnant. So now, if she wasn't pregnant at the time and she already had children from him, then no problem. She would be able to continue eating it. We're talking about where she's a kosher woman. We're talking about there was no problem with their marriage. She's not an almono or grusha or what happened. The problem is because she's pregnant, then that creates a complication over here, namely that, so it creates a complication in particular as far as her slaves. Because when we're talking about the Nichset Tzoyin Barzel, what happens is ultimately the same way as during her husband's lifetime, those Nichset Tzoyin Barzel belong to him, the same way after he dies, they belong to the Yoshim until she demands them back. Now, we just said in the previous Gemara that when she demands them back, then fine, she gets them back. But until then, they belong to the Yoshim. Now, that means one of those Yoshim potentially is the unborn baby that she's carrying. On the other hand, we're going to see in the Gemara two reasons why why slaves that are owned by an unborn kohen are not able to eat truma yet. We'll see in the Gemara two reasons why. Therefore, lo yechlo avadeha b'truma. So therefore, her avadim, her nixit sein barzal avadim, are not able to eat truma mipnei chelke shel uber, because of the portion that belongs to the unborn baby. So in other words, if she hadn't been pregnant, then there wouldn't be any problem. She's still able to eat truma because she has already children. She has other children from her husband, who, because they're eating, then she's able to eat, as we talked about yesterday in the Gemara, and as we'll have in more detail later on in our perek. And the avodim would be able to eat for the same reason as well, because they belong to those children, and those children are able to eat truma, and therefore so can they. But now you have this unborn child, and therefore that messes things up. And now the avodim can't eat truma until the baby is born. Because Rabbi Yossi says an unborn baby has the ability to passel somebody from eating truma, but not, he does not have the ability to cause somebody else to eat truma. So Rashi explains this concept of a uber poisel v'ene machel is not specifically as far as avodim. It means, for example, that we have the other way around. Now let's take the example the opposite way. If there was a bas koyan married to a Yisrael, so we know once she marries the Yisrael, she can't eat truma anymore. But so now, if her husband dies, now the din is, as we're going to learn in more detail in the perek, that once her husband dies, if he leaves her childless, then she's able to go back to eating truma in her father's house. But now, when she's pregnant, then that doesn't work. It passels her from eating truma, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. And on the other hand, ve'ene machil, and in an example like the first case of our Mishnah, where she's a Bas Yisrael married to a Kohen, the fact that she's pregnant with the Kohen's child is not reason enough for her or her avodim to be able to eat truma, unless there are, so when there are other children, at least she can eat truma. But when there are no other children, let's say, then that you can't say, well, she's carrying the child of the Kohen, and as soon as that child is born, she'll be able to eat truma. Therefore, now she can also. No, that's what we mean. That uber poisel ve'ene. That's what we mean ve'ene machel. Tosfos discusses that it does mean that, sure, but it can also mean poisel ve'ene machel. It means that it can also mean poisel as far as the avodim, as we just said, and ene machil as far as and ene machil as far as his mother. Anyway, the point is that so therefore divrei Rabbi Yossi. So all of that is what Rabbi Yossi says. Omru loy, the Chachamim say to Rabbi Yossi, if you're going to say like that, that because of the unborn baby, therefore the avodim can't eat, well, then if you're telling us that applies when it's a Bas Yisrael married to a Kohen, that what happens, we're saying as soon as her husband dies, she herself still has the ability to eat truma, but you're telling us her avodim don't, af Bas Kohen l'Kohen, umesvi nichamu beres, then the same thing should apply if she's a Bas Kohen married to a Kohen, and her husband dies and leaves her pregnant. By the same logic, because of the unborn baby's chelek in the avodim, they also shouldn't be able to eat truma. So what, after all, if you're saying that the point is that an unborn baby can only be poisel, he can never be machil, So why are you mentioning it specifically when she's a Bas Yisrael? The same logic would apply if she's a Bas Koyim. So why indeed Rabbi Yossi makes that distinction, we'll see in the Gemara. So first of all, the question then is, the Gemara starts out, Iboyeli, Taima de Rabbi Yossi, Mishum de Kasaba Uber Mem E Zara Zoru, is it that Rabbi Yossi holds that this unborn baby is not considered a Kohen until he's actually born? Until he's born, he's considered a Zor. So that would explain the case of our Mishnah. She's a Bas Yisrael, so therefore she herself was a Zara. Up till now, she was able to eat Truma only because her husband is a Kohen. So now we would say, in effect, that the fact that she's pregnant with the Kohen's child, fine, but nevertheless, she herself is a Zara. The child she's carrying is a Zara. And therefore, that unborn baby has part ownership of those avodim, and therefore that's why the eved can't eat. So in other words, it would be exactly the same case as, let's say, you had a koyan and a zor owned a owned an Evan partnership, we wouldn't say the Evan is able to eat, so it would be the same thing over here. Or Dilma, or maybe is Rabbi Yossi's reason? Never mind the question of whether the child is a zur. You know, even if she herself is a bas koyin, yolud machil she'ini yolud eini machil. Maybe Rabbi Yossi holds only a baby that's already born has the ability to make that his avodim can eat truma, but if he hasn't been born yet, then no. So the Gemara says l'may naftamina. Now, what's the practical difference between the two explanations? And the answer is l'ubur b'mei kehenes. Exactly that. Let's say she's a bas koyin, so then there's no issue of zorus, because whether you consider that the baby is already a koyin as soon as he, either way, the baby is definitely a koyin as soon as he's conceived. Because you can't say he's not in the womb of a zara. She herself is a bas koyin, after all. So then if that was the reason, then in that case there'd be no problem with the avodim eating truma. On the other hand, if you say that it's a matter of unborn versus born, then the fact is he's unborn. So therefore you'd still have the same consideration. So Tosfos explains now again there is a difference between the basis for his mother eating truma versus the avodim eating truma. We mentioned this in the Gemara yesterday, that you have two different bases on which, when we say that one, because one person eats truma, therefore another can, you have where it's related to kinyan kaspai, for example, over here avodim whom he owns, versus we talked about yesterday, and we're going to talk in more detail later in the perek, about, for example, where because a child is able to eat truma, therefore his mother can. Where there, after all, the child doesn't even need to be a koyin. The child or the grandchild, whatever, could even be a mamzer, and his grandmother can eat truma on that basis. But the point is, as far as avodim, do we say that? So as far as avodim, the question is it that they have to be born, or is that not the issue? So the Gemara says, so what's the deal? What is the reason behind what Rabbi Yossi says? So Amar Rabba, Hainu Taima de Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi's reason is the first one, because he holds until the baby is born, he's considered a zar. So therefore he has part ownership of these avodim, and therefore they can't eat truma. So in other words, according to Rabba, if he was a bas koyin, then there wouldn't be an issue. Rabbi Yosef Amar, on the other hand, Rabbi Yosef says, Yolud Machil, She'en Yolud Ein Machil. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef says the second reason, that only when he's born is he going to be able to have that, because of him, his Avodim, his Kinyan Kaspoy, can eat Truma, but until then not. So it doesn't matter whether she's a Bas Koyin or Bas Yisrael, the same rules would apply. So the Gemara says, Mesvi. So the Gemara says, I have a contradiction on Rabbi Yosef. A Braisa says, Braisa says, it starts out the same as our Mishnah, that Omru loy l'Rabbi Yossi, that the other Chachamim said to Rabbi Yossi, me'acha she'ad tolano abas Yisrael l'koyin, given that you've told us already that this applies to a bas Yisrael married to a koyin, look, bas koyin l'koyin mahu, so what would you say the din is by a bas koyin married to a koyin? Omalahem, and he answers them, the reason I didn't mention that, zu shamaiti v'zuloy shamaiti, because I heard from my Rebbeim that the case of a Bas Yisrael, that the Avodim would be also to eat truma. I did not hear that the same would apply to a Bas Koyin. In fact, Rashi says, it's not even a matter of saying I didn't hear, as in, so therefore I don't know. Rashi says, L'isu ela l'hatera. I didn't hear that it would be also, I actually heard that it would be mutter in that case to eat. Well then, let's consider. Well then, if we go according to the first reason, which Rabba is saying is the reason behind Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Well, then that explains why Rabbi Yossi is saying that I heard that one case is osur and one case is mutter, because there's an obvious difference. When she's a Bas Yisrael, we can consider the child a zor till he's born. When she's a Bas Koyin, we can't. Ela i'amet yolud machil she'en yolud einim machil. But if you say now in that case, Tosfos says, so why would the Chachamim even be asking him the question? Because they themselves don't know what the reason behind his din is. They thought that the reason might be because of the reason of Yolud Machil. But if, in fact, that is his own reason, the reason that Rabbi Yosef is accepting as his reason, my zu shamayti v'zu lo shamayti, then what do you mean? I heard about this case and I didn't hear about that case. It's exactly the same case, because in both cases, the child is unborn and the same din would apply to both. So what says Kasha? You're right. It would be a Kasha on Rabbi Yosef's understanding. Nevertheless, as usual, Kasha doesn't mean tshuvta, doesn't mean that we've slugged up Rabbi Yosef's explanation. What Rabbi Yosef said can still be valid, and in fact the Rambam accepted as halacha. First of all, the Rambam accepts that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef of our Mishnah, and second of all, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef's understanding of him. So therefore, it's not. So even if she's a Bas Koyin, the fact that she's pregnant and those children and that unborn child has part ownership of these avodim prevents them from eating truma until the child is born. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Zu Divir Rab Yosef. Now, all of this is only according to Rab Yosef. Ava Chachamim Bonim, the Chum say no. Yesh Leib Bonim, Oichlim Bishum Bonim. The Chum say, never mind the unborn baby. If she has other children with her husband, the Kohen, then those avodim are able, the Nichseitz and Barzo, are able to continue eating truma on the basis of the other children, because they say that the unborn baby has no ownership of them at all. So therefore, in other words, according to the Chachamim, we ignore the unborn baby. So the other children, the avodim are their kinyan kaspa, therefore they can continue eating. And if the husband, the Kohen, didn't leave children, then they'll be able to eat because the Kohen has brothers who will inherit him. And if he doesn't have brothers either, then you have the whole family. After all, we know that every born Jew has Yoshim. Only a ger can possibly die without Yoshim. So a Kohen is gonna have, if he doesn't have children, then he has brothers. If he doesn't have brothers, then he has uncles, he has great uncles, great grandfathers, second cousins three times removed, whatever it is, you're ultimately always gonna have that he has Yoshim. And therefore the Chachamim say that until the baby is born, then they are the ones who inherit his property. So therefore they say that there's no issue of an unborn baby at all. Tosfos explains, actually, now we could have just as well said that the Chachamim don't agree with the two things we just said. We just said Rabbi Yossi has two possible reasons for his shita. One because we don't say that the unborn baby is considered a zor, and one because we say that the only yolud machil sheni yolud any machil, which later on we're going to learn that from a drasha. The Gemara could have said that the Chachamim disagree with both those concepts, but instead the Gemara says that the Gemara knew that the Gemara had a Kabbalah that the Chachamim say it because of a different reason, because they say that the unborn baby is the unborn baby doesn't yaush in any way. So the Gemara says, Zuvaloi Svirolei. Now you're telling me Shmuel is saying that this is what Rabbi Yossi says, and the Chachamim say different, implying that Shmuel does not agree with Rabbi Yossi's din. Ha'omale Shmuel of Chana Bagadta. Don't we find, though, that Shmuel said to Rav Chana Bagadta? Bagadta, Rashi says, can have two possibilities. One is that Bagadta is short for Baal Agada, that he was an expert in Agada, but he was a Talmud of Shmuel, so Shmuel is going to have him make an announcement of the halacha. The second possibility, Rashi says, is Bagadta means he was from Baghdad. The famous city of Baghdad was founded only later in the times of the Gaonim, but there was a village there beforehand that had the same name, and so this Rav Chana might have been from there. Anyway, so he tells him, Puk Aisili Beyasara, go out, bring me 10 Tamar Chachamim, because I want to make an announcement of a halacha and I want it to be well publicized. De'e Malach Ban Payu, I want to tell you the following din in their presence. Hamazaka L'Uber Kona. If a person says about an unborn baby, I want to give him such and such, then that unborn baby is Kona. We don't say, in other words, that he's considered Dabar Shaloi Bala Olam. So we see that a baby does have the ability to acquire things. Therefore, he has the ability to yaushin as well. So that would mean that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yossi. So why is Shmuel using the expression Zu Divir Rabbi Yossi as though to say Rabbi Yossi says this, but I don't agree with it. I agree with the Chachamim. Elam no Zu Usvirale. No, what Shmuel is saying is this is what Rabbi Yossi says, and I agree with it. Well, then the question is, my kamash malon. And in that case, what does Shmuel want to tell us by that? He wants us to know the pligi rabbanon alei de Rabbi Yosi. He wants us to know that the chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yosi. So like this, we thought that he's saying that in order to say as like a disclaimer to say you should know Rabbi Yosi says this, but the halacha is actually like chachamim. Now we're saying that no, he just wants you to know you should be aware that this is not that Rabbi Yosi is not the only opinion on the subject. Nevertheless, though, the halacha is in fact like him. By the way, Tosfos Yeshanim discusses over here. I mean, the fact is, we do say that you can't be machna davar shaloi bala olam, but here it's not. I mean, the object itself is bala olam. It's only the baby is not. First Tosfos Yeshanim says that because the object is bala olam. Then Tosfos says that no, you don't even need that. The baby is already considered davar shaloi bala olam because we're talking about over here where huka ubra, where we already the pregnancy is far enough along that we can see that she's visibly pregnant. That can already be considered davar shaloi bala olam. Okay.
You mean
first explanation is that we're talking about that, for example, the Avodim are already Bala Olam. The Avodim, and therefore, right. But now Tosfos Yeshanim is saying you don't even need that. Even if you say that you're focusing on the Makabel Matana, once the pregnancy is recognizable, then already the baby is considered Davar Shebala Olam. Okay, so the Gemara says, Umi Pligi, are you telling me, in fact, that the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yosi? Mosiv Rab Zakai, but Rab Zakai points out a contradiction, or Hagos Habach changes it to Va Omer Rab Zakai. Didn't Rab Zakai say, Zu Adris Hey Rab Yosi, Mipi Shmai Vavkalion? Rab Yosi said this testimony about this din about the unborn baby and the Avodim in the name of Shmai Vavkalion. Now, it wasn't directly. Rab Yosi lived a couple hundred years after Shmai Vavkalion, but he had a Kabbalah from his Rebbeim that Shmai Vavkalion said this. Vahoiduloi, and Rab Zakai says, the Chachamim agreed with him. So that implies that they don't disagree. Ravashi mikatani v'kiblu. So Ravashi says no, because the expression, if it meant they actually conceded the point, then the expression would be v'kiblu. They accepted his testimony that this comes from Shmai Vavtalion. All it is v'hoidu loikatani. The expression is they admitted to him, meaning demistaber taimei. They said fine. You have a very logical basis for your explanation. We can accept that you have a logical basis. That doesn't mean that we accept it. La halacha, we say that the baby relative to the other heirs, the other children or brothers or what have you, is not considered to be inheriting it yet. But the hoidu just means that they accepted that he has a valid logical basis. And fine, even they say Shmai Vavtalion said it. But okay, Shmai Vavtalion is not necessarily the last word in halacha. We can disagree with that. Okay, so Shmuel wants us to know, nevertheless, the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Yosi. The Gemara continues. Tonan Rabbanon, we learn in a Braisa, Hiniach Bonim, more on this topic, Hiniach Bonim, if the Kohen left over children and he passed away, Elu ve'elu oichlim, and then both groups are able to eat, meaning both the nichsim belug and the nichsim tzayin barzel. So the nichsim belug, of course, we never had a problem with, because after all, she's able to eat truma. Again, the scenario in our Mishnah was that she had other children from her husband, the Kohen, and the only problem was the Nichsei Tzoyin Barzel, because those belong to the Yoshim, and one of the Yoshim is the unborn baby, and we said for two possible reasons that might be a problem, but she herself was certainly able to continue eating Truma because she has other children, and because they can eat, she can eat. So therefore, the Nichsei Malug are not a problem. The Nichsei Tzoyin Barzel can eat, because again, because they belong to the children. So therefore, elu ve'elu oichlim. So both groups of avodim are able to eat. Hinichamu uberes. On the other hand, if he left her pregnant without any children, elu ve'elu oichlim, then neither group can eat, because the unborn baby, as we said, doesn't have the ability to have either his mother or the avodim eat because of him. Hiniach bonim hinichamu uberes. Now, what happens, which is the case of our Mishnah, if he left living children, but he also left her pregnant, then avdei malug oichlim kederach sheyecheles, then the slaves who are nichsim malug will be able to eat the same way as she does, because after all, they belong to her. Avdei tzein barzel lo yoichlim apnei chelke shel ober. On the other hand, the nichsim tzein barzel ones will not be able to eat. because of this portion of them that belongs to the unborn baby, because as we just said, Rabbi Yossi holds that which means, by the way, now the Braisa is making it clear that that is the reason behind Rabbi Yossi's opinion, not the reason of because the unborn baby is considered a zar, and therefore, again, that supports what Rabbi Yosef had said before, which is why we said that even though it was a kasha on Rabbi Yossi, it wasn't tiyuvta, because we have right here another braisa that supports what he says. So that's Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi omer mishum aviv. Now, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi says in the name of his father differently. Habas ma'achelas haben enim achel. If you know, the daughter can make it possible for the slaves to eat truma, but the son cannot. What does that mean? We'll see on Amud Beis what that means. Rabbi Shimon Yochai omer zecharim yoichlu kulan. Rabbi Shimon Yochai says the males, all of them can eat, nekebes lo yoichlu, but the girls cannot eat. Now, Rashi says over here, we shouldn't be goris the word zchorim, because what do you mean? It's not a question of whether there are some boys. As long as there's even one boy, then the avadim can eat because of him. Because after all, the unborn baby is either a boy, and then Rav Shimon Yochai would be saying like the Chachamim that we're not concerned about the unborn baby. After all, the unborn baby might be a girl. If there are boys, then she's not yaushining anything anyway. And so now Rashi, so like this, Rashi explains, which the Gemara itself is going to say soon. When the woman is pregnant, let's consider there's two possibilities. She's either carrying a boy or a girl. Now, if it's a boy, then we're saying, according to Rabbi Yossi, we're saying that baby has the ability to inherit, and therefore, even now in the womb, he still has a certain ownership of the avodah. Now, if there's already at least one boy, which is the case we're talking about over here, then either he has a portion in the avodah, or it's a girl, and a girl is not going to yarush in anything. Now, though, in addition, you have among boys, there's a certain percentage that get miscarried. So once you do that, Rav Shimon is going to say that you have a majority of cases where the unborn child is not going to be yarshin in any way, and therefore he says you have nothing to worry about. So that's why he says...
Boys are not more likely than girls. Statistically, they actually find
that boys are slightly more likely to be miscarried than girls, but that's not the point. We start with the assumption that the distribution is about 50-50. Then once we have that a certain number of babies are going to be miscarried, well then, some of them are boys, some of them are girls, but the point is, therefore, let's say it's a 100% chance that there's a baby over there, obviously, because she's pregnant, but out of that 100%, let's say 49 are going to be healthy girls, 49 are going to be healthy boys, and 2% are going to be miscarried, let's say. So whatever the percentages are, the point is that you have a majority. Once you add that, you don't have 50% that are going to be viable boys. So therefore, so Rav Shimon is saying, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, that you can ignore that. So therefore, so Rav Shimon says, "Chorim yoichlu kolon nekeves lo yoichlu." If you have boys, if she has boys already, then the avodim are able to eat. But if she only has girls so far, then the avodim can't eat because then the unborn baby might be a male. So if you already have males, then fine. You don't have to worry so much about that the unborn baby might also be a male, might be a healthy, viable male, and then he has a portion of those avodim. But if she only has girls, then you can't. So now Rashi says there was a girsa that had kulon zchorim yechelu, kulon nekevis lo yechelu. Rashi says, what do you mean kulon nekevis? Doesn't matter, kulon zchorim. Doesn't matter whether it's all boys or whether she had so far some boys or some girls. As long as there are some boys already that she has, then that's reason enough to ignore the unborn baby. However, Tosfos Yeshanim says that maybe kulon means both kinds of avod. Anyway, the point is, So he says that's the difference. Shemi motze uber zacher, because after all, if she only had girls so far, the unborn baby might be a male. Ve'im labonis m'makam ben klum, and we know that when there are sons, the daughters don't inherit anything. So therefore, then it would come out that these avodim belong to him, and he's not born yet. And we said uber poisel ve'im achel. So the Gemara says, "My iri Hashemi imotze uber zacher. Why even bother mentioning that point that it might be a male? Typically, the nekevi nami posla knew, and if it was, and if we knew for a fact that it was a girl, Well, all she has so far is girls. That girl is also going to inherit. So what? So if she had so far, she had a bunch of girls. We're there. If she never ends up having boys with her husband, the Kohen. Remember, her husband is dead at this point. So the baby she's carrying is the last chance. So if it comes out, it's all girls, then fine. It's going to be like nice slavka. They're all going to inherit together. And if it's a boy, then he's inheriting exclusively. So why even bother mentioning the point where he's a male? Regardless, whether he's a male or a female, he has either a portion or the entire ownership of these avadim. And the answer is, you're right. Reb Shimon is actually implying that there are two different considerations. Number one, if it is a girl, then she would passel as well, because after all, now she's going to inherit together with her sisters, and uber poisel the any machil, like we said. Second of all, it might be a boy, and then he's inheriting the whole thing. And then the girls are not inheriting anything because the boy who's born after them inherits everything. So therefore, so in short, Reb Shimon is saying that if she has no boys from her husband, the Kohen, so far, or she has his girls, one way or the other, how you look at what's the story with the baby that she's carrying, either way, until that baby is born, the Avdei Tzon Barzel are not going to be able to eat. Now, what about though, Reb Shimon had said, Zchorim Yoifu? So the question is, how, why? What do you mean, if she has boys, then the Avodim are able to continue eating Truma? What about that unborn baby? And the answer is, here is where we have what Rashi mentioned before. One possibility is, Reb Shimon says, we're not worried about the miut. Because again, like we said, when you consider the statistics, the number, the percentages of the number of the percentages of that the child is going to be a boy and that it's going to be healthy and viable is less than 50%. Because again, you have about half of children who are born are girls, and among the ones who are born, a certain percentage are stillbirths or otherwise non-viable. So therefore, once you add those together, you have over 50%, and therefore, so now that it should be a healthy boy is a miut. And Reb Shimon would say that we're not choshish about miut. Tosfos mentions, by the way, a point that comes.
It's not like a little miut.
It may be a large miut. So one second. Tosfos mentions over here a point that there aren't, when we talk about roiv and miut, we have to distinguish between two different kinds of roiv and miut. We have, they're called in halacha, ruba de ise kamon and ruba de lese kamon. Ruba de ise kamon means when we actually have the roiv and the miut in front of us, and we have to determine this particular item doesn't belong to the roiv or the miut. For example, we're going to have in a couple of months, Rez Hashem, at the beginning of Ksubas, we're going to have cases where a woman had relations. We're not sure who the father, and had a baby. We're not sure who the father is. We're there. We have to consider the roiv of the people in the city and determine whether the father belongs to that roiv or whether he might be from the miut of Psalm. Because there it's ruba d'isei kamon. There you have the roiv exists in front of us. On the other hand, so then when you have ruba d'isei kamon, then everybody agrees we're not worried about the miut. And we'll see it actually in that Gemara there when it comes to Yuchsin, we have higher standards, but still the point is that in general, when you have the Ruba de Ise Kamon, then we have less reason to be concerned about miut. Here, what we're talking about, on the other hand, is a statistical miut. Yeah. We're talking Ruba de Lese Kamon, it's called. It's not that we have in front of us the babies who are born and we're going to go start counting them up. It means statistically, we can figure out that there are a certain number that are girls and a certain number that are boys and a certain number that are non-viable. So you call it the population statistics. So here, Reb Shimon would be the one who says that we're not worried about that kind of need. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is that maybe Reb Shimon does hold with choshish for the miut. But what do we do in order to avoid the situation where, because this baby might be a boy and might be a viable boy, therefore you're saying he has part ownership of these avadim, and therefore the avadim are not going to be able to eat truma till he's born. What do we do? Davdin le takanta kirab Nachman omer Shmuel. What we do is we fix up the situation the way that Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel. Namely, the Omer of Nachman Omer Shmuel, Yisoymim Shabo Lachlak B'nichse Abihem, when you have Yisoymim, well, let's say, for example, so let's start with the case where all of them are born already. And then we can apply the same idea when one of them is unborn yet. So when you have a bunch of a person passed away, he left a bunch of little children, and they need to divide up their father's property. So now they themselves are not going to be able to know what they should take for themselves. Based in Ma'aminim Lahem Apotropos, based in sets up an apotropos, a trustee for them. Rashi explains that it's an individual trustee for each one. So each apotropos is representing one particular child. Tosfos refers to over here something that they say in Gittin, where they say over there, and the Rambam also holds that no, it means you set up one apotropos that he manages the entire division. Anyway, Uboro Lahem Chelek Yofa, and he's responsible to pick a nice portion for each one. So according to Rashi, you have a separate apotropos for each one. So that's his job is to make sure that his client, that the particular Yosim that he represents, is going to get a nice portion. Higdilu Yecholim Limchos. Now, so Shmuel continues, when the children get older, then they can protest. They can say, you know what? I wouldn't have agreed to take this portion. The apotropos did it, but I don't agree with what he did. So what is it? So what good does it do that the apotropos did it in the first place? Rashi explains as far as the payrus up until now. So let's take a simple example. There were two kids. The guy left, for example, a field and a vineyard. And the apotropos decided, let's say one child gets the field of grain and the other one gets the vineyard. Now, when they get older, so they're the one who got the vineyard says, you know what, I'm not happy with that. I would have preferred the grain field. So fine, they can undo the chalukah. But nevertheless, whatever grapes and whatever wine he got from the vineyard up until that point still belonged to him. We don't say he has to reimburse his brother for it. On the other hand, Rav Nachman on his own disagrees with Shmuel. He says, no, when they get older, they can't be Moichadim Kain, Makoyach based in Yofa. Because otherwise, what good is the strength of Basedin? Basedin said that this guy, that Basedin appointed this apotropos, so these apotropos in, and gave them broad powers. So how can now the Yisraelim come and undo it later?
We sometimes go like Rav Nachman.
Many times, in general, the halacha is like Rav Nachman and Dini Mamanis, and that's how it is over here. So now, applying that to our case, same idea. What do we do? Given that if this Ubo owns these Avodim, then that's going to create problems as far as them eating Truma. So Basedin sets up an apotropos and arranges that the other children will inherit the Avodim and the unborn child will inherit an equal amount of other property corresponding to that. So therefore, he has no ownership of the Ubrim, says Reb Shimon, and therefore we're good. Therefore, the Avodim can continue eating Truma. This is according to Reb Nachman. So now the Gemara says, yeah, Rav Nachman Rayakovia. So the Gemara says, Lema did Rav Nachman Tanoihi. Well, does that mean then, since we're saying Rav Shimon is saying that, and the other Chachamim disagree with him, does that imply that the other Chachamim do not accept Rav Nachman's opinion on this subject? And the answer is, Loi, Dikulam Islahu did Rav Nachman. No, we can say they all do agree with Rav Nachman. What we can say is, the question is, again, are we choshish for the miut? So if they made that takana, so in other words, we would say, the other Chachamim would say, if they made the takana, sure, we have no problem with the Avodim eating Truma. But if we didn't make that takana, then Reb Shimon is saying, still, the Avodim can eat Truma because we're not Choshish L'Miyota. The Tanakama is Choshish for Miyota. Again, we were dealing over here with Ruba Delase Kamon, a statistical Roiv and Miyot. Then the other Chachamim are saying, we do have to be concerned about that. But if they had done Reb Nachman's idea, then yeah, the other Chachamim would agree that that would be fine. The Rashba, by the way, makes an interesting point over here. If we're saying that the apotropos is able to pick and say that the Uber is going to own only other nechosim and then the other children will only avodim, then that comes out that we're dealing with a case of Brera over here, because it comes out that we're saying that retroactive to when the father died, then retroactive to then we're saying that he owns or didn't own these avodim. Since when do we say yesh Brera with something daraisa? So the Rashba says maybe in fact Rashi holds that yesh Brera even in things daraisa. Now the Gemara continues. Let's continue with the Braisa from before. We said Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yosi Omer Mishum Aviv. So we had again Rabbi Yosi saying. So we had Rabbi Yosi saying that because the unborn child, therefore the avodim can't the nichset son barzal avodim can't eat truma. And again, we said what we just said now is if they were to do Rabbi Nachman's idea of dividing up the nechosim, then fine, even Rabbi Yosi wouldn't have a problem with that. But if they didn't, then he's choshesh lemiyota. But then we had Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi, Yom Mishum Aviv, Habas Machil Aben Einim Machil. He had said a daughter can machil machelas. Really, it's supposed to be the daughter can make that the avodim can eat truma. A son cannot. So we have to figure out Maishna Ben Delay Machil. So what are we saying? if the widow had sons already, then we're saying Delay Machel was saying that now at this point he can't allow the avodim can't continue to eat truma mishum chelkish over, because again the ubo now has a part ownership of these avodim, because you know if she had, let's say, three sons already and now she's carrying a baby who might be the fourth, well the problem is that fourth now might own one quarter of those avodim. Well, bas namin le tachalim nechelkish over new, and if she only had daughters, wouldn't the same thing apply? Same idea. Then the son is going to be yarshining 100% of the avodim. So why is Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi making the distinction between Ben and Bas? The answer is Omar Abaya Hochman Nechosim Mu'ot Maskinen, because we're talking about over here where there's little Nechosim, namely like this. The Chachamim made a takana, it's discussed a lot in Baba Basra. Even though, of course, Minatorah, sons inherit, daughters don't, but the Chachamim made a takana that the girls are entitled to Mizonis until they get married. So if he left unmarried girls, then they're entitled to mezonos out of the estate. And the Chachamim made that even stronger than the Yerusha of the sons. So therefore, what happens is, so if you have nechosim merubim, if you have enough nechosim to be able to support the daughters till they get married, and there's still nechosim to give to the sons, then fine, that's what you do. If not, then the daughters' claim for them for mezonos takes precedence, and the sons, if need be, will have to go begging because they don't get a Yerusha. So therefore, that's the case we're talking about over here, says Abaya.
Okay. If the nechassim will be completely used up,
if the nechassim will be completely used up by giving mizonis to the daughters, then we say that the daughters get them and the sons yishalu al psafim. Yeah, I mean, in the Mishnah over there in Baba Basra, you have Admon argues with that, but the halacha is not like Admon. The halacha is like the chachamim. Anyway, so therefore, so Abaya says, going to ika ben bahadi bas. So we're talking about. So we're talking about that there is already a son and a daughter. So now, manafshach. So no matter how you look at it, then you have a difference whether what the baby is. If the unborn baby is a boy, well, he's not in any better position than the one who's already there. The one who's already there is not going to be inheriting the nechassim because they're only nechassim watim, and they're going to be going to his sister for her mezonos. So then the unborn baby is in the same boat. And if the unborn baby ends up being a daughter, well, why would she be able to eat truma? Is only b'takanta d'rabbanan. Is only based on the takana of the chachamim, because min haTorah she wouldn't be yaushining anything. Only her brother would. D'rabbanan were taking the money and giving it for mizonis for her and her older sister. Well. Well, as long as the baby is not born yet, then the Chachamim did not make that takana. So that's why when Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi says there's a difference between a boy and a girl, what he doesn't mean whether there's only boys or only girls. He means whether there's only girls so far, or whether there's at least one boy as well as girls. So in other words, if there was no son, then the unborn baby is going to get the nechassim as Yerusha together with her older sister. So therefore, so in other words, when Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi is saying habas imaben machelas, that if there's a daughter as well as a son, the avodim will be able to eat truma. But if there's a ben without a bas, then ain't a machil, then he can't because his unborn sister might end up getting all of these nechosim muatim, and being unborn, she can't be machil the avodim. Okay, so the Gemara says, "B'mayu kimtim nechosim muatim." Okay, so you're explaining then that Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi's case is referring to nechosim muatim, and therefore we're saying that the daughter has precedence over it, even though she's unborn. Well, ema seifa. But look at what Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi continues saying. He says, "Shemi yimotzei ha'uber zacher." He says the baby might end up being a boy. Ve'in labonis m'makom ben klum, and daughters don't get anything when there are sons. Adaraba. So isn't it the other way around? Nechosim muatim debonis nidu. On the contrary, what we just said is there's nechosim watim, then the daughters take precedence. So Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi's explanation of what he's saying doesn't fit with what we just said. But the answer is sefer ason, the nechosim merubin. The answer is you're right. He's telling us about two different cases. When there's nechosim muatim, then it depends whether there's already sons there or not. And when there's nechasim merubim, then we're saying there's a different consideration that the baby might be a boy, and that he joins in yashining. So then we would say, like Rabbi Yossi had said that like Rabbi Yossi, his father had said that that either way, whether the already existing children are boys or girls, either way you have a problem, because if it's girls, then the unborn baby is yashining everything, and as an uber, he can't make his slaves be able to eat truma, and if there are already boys, then he still has a portion. Again, they disagree with Rav Shimon, who says we don't have to worry about that because lo chashinim miyuta. They are concerned about the miyut. So therefore, so Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yossi is telling us, in other words, there's two different cases. You have to consider the case of nechasim merubim and the case of nechasim muatim, and each one is going to have its different rules. In the case of nechasim merubim, in the case of nechasim muatim, we would say that there's a difference whether the already living children are boys or girls, and if it's nechasim merubim, then it doesn't really matter, because either way, whether the baby is a boy or not, and either way, poisel v'ene machil. Okay, so the Gemara says, you're telling me that nechasim mu'atim belong exclusively to the daughters? If the yisoimim go ahead and they sell from the nechasim mu'atim, what they sold is sold. So Tosfos explains that we're talking about over here where before Beis Din, now what's supposed to happen is Beis Din is right away supposed to take possession of the estate in order to give it to the daughters. So here we're talking about, Tosfos first starts by saying that we're talking about that they grabbed it before Beis Din got a hold of them. Tosfos says that not necessarily. It could mean Kodmu means before the daughters started taking it for themselves. So even it's already in the possession of Beis Din, but the Yisoimim then got a hold of it. Masha machru machru, what they sold is sold. So it's still considered in their rishus. So why shouldn't we say, so we're back to the question then, how can the Avodim eat if there were only daughters? Or if there are sons and daughters, we're saying that the Avodim can eat on the basis of the daughters are going to get the property. But what happens? The fact is, the sons have a certain ownership of it. Which, by the way, the Gemara tells us in Sota, it was in the Daf of Sota for Sphira a few days ago, that this is an example of Rosh Ha'orim. If a person advises these Yisoimim to do that, then it's an example of a Rosh Ha'orim, because he's taking away from the daughters. The Chachamim had made a takana that the daughters are supposed to get it, and he's going and evading that. So yeah. It means a crafty Roshim. If somebody gives advice to the Yisoimim to do that, like he's not even benefiting from that himself, but he's telling the Yisoimim how to evade. Yeah, Orum Meloshim Vanochashay Orum. So the point is the Yisoimim do have a certain ownership of the Avodim. So ve'elamai bastikatoni. So therefore, no, we have to understand differently. When Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi distinguishes between ben and bas, we're not talking about the children like we were assuming until now. Ve'elamai bastikatoni a. What does he mean by bas? He means the mother herself. So in other words, what he means is that the mother is going to be able to feed her avodim of nichsim alug, because after all, she up until now has been able to eat truma. She's still able to eat truma because she has children from the koyen, and by virtue of that, she's able to eat truma. So therefore, so her avodim, her nichsim alug, are able to also continue eating truma. So the Gemara says, "Yihachi hainu Rabbi Yosi." Well, then he's saying exactly. But on the other hand, we're saying that if it's not a matter of the mother being able to give them, if it's a matter of the son, then not, because once we deal with Yerusha already, then we have to consider the unborn baby's portion of the Yerusha. So the Gemara says, Yehochi Hainu Rabbi Yossi. Well, then it comes out, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is saying the same thing as Rabbi Yossi. And the answer is Kula Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi Katanilo. You could say Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is teaching the whole thing. He's telling us what Rabbi Yossi holds, and he's clarifying that in fact, there would be a difference between he's telling us the whole thing is clarifying his father's opinion that there's a difference between, there's no difference whether the children are boys or girls, there's just a difference. Are the avodim eating by virtue of their mother, who in turn is eating by virtue of her children? That would be fine. On the other hand, once we deal with that they're eating because of the yorshim, then you have a problem because of the unborn baby, because the unborn baby has a certain part ownership of those avodim. Again, they're choshesh lemiyota, so the baby might end up being a boy, and therefore they're eating machil. Okay, Yishkoyach, everyone.